We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Well, hello and good afternoon, at least from the Eastern time zone. I imagine that we've got folks logging on and connecting from all over. But thank you for attending this afternoon. And welcome to our conversation around state leadership for interoperability, leveraging data for academic excellence. And I am joined today by a fantastic panel. And we will get into all of, you know, the details of who everyone is shortly. Thank you for adding your locations there in the chat area. So I do appreciate that. We also have a community, an online community that's on digital content, and we would love for you to join us in that community. And you see that the URL there is www.edweb.net/digital-content. It is free, and it's a great community resource to participate in. Some of you are looking to earn a CE certificate by participating today. You will get that automatically emailed to you after 24 hours if you did pre-register today or if you logged in with your email address. But if you didn't do those things or you are watching this via recording, there is a CE quiz that you can access through the community. And you can get into it there, take your quiz, and get your certificate of completion. So let's start with a little poll. We'd like to get to know a little bit more about all of you who are attending today. And I believe, here we go. You will only be seeing the poll or only be able to respond to the poll if you are accessing this via, say, a laptop or desktop computer. If you're joining this from a mobile device, you may not be able to participate. That's okay. We're looking at getting a sense of how folks on this webinar are related to education technology. How do you engage with it? So we've got lots of teachers today and lots of others here today, it looks like. So if you are one of the others, if you would share in the chat area what your otherness is, what other type of role you have, just so that we can get a little bit of a sense of who all we have joining us today. We'll give it just another moment for people to click in and click through, but it does look like we are predominantly teachers and other fantastic roles in education. So thank you for participating in that. We will have other opportunities to engage later. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. And I am Tracy Weeks. I'm the executive director of CETA, which is the State Education Technology Directors Association. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about CETA. Certainly, I'm not going to walk through all of my bio there, but I do come to this role having been a state leader before coming to CETA, so glad to bring that perspective to what we do as an organization. But to give you a little bit of an idea about CETA, we're actually over 15 years old now. I need to update my slide, don't I? We're about 16 years old now. And we serve and support anyone who works at the state level that considers themselves a digital learning leader. And that may look very different from state to state. And if you want to own that badge of being a digital learning leader at the state level, we want to help support what you do. Some of the things that we do are advocacy, both at the state and the federal level. We have professional learning opportunities. We have public private partnerships and state and federal relations. But I would say a big part of what we do is helping to connect state leaders with one another, because it can often become a very lonely position when you're the only person in a state who does what you do. You want to connect with others in other states who do what you do. And so being able to connect and share And celebrate and commiserate are all part of what we help our state leaders to do and are happy to do that. CETA also produces a number of tools and resources, and we'll be talking about one of those today. But we have focused on areas such as broadband, instructional materials, and then today we'll be talking a little bit more deeply about our work in interoperability. But you'll see that we've had a number of items to be published in the last several years, all the way including looking at broadband levels for schools and that were ultimately adopted by the FCC in their E-rate modernization order. So we're happy to continue to produce these materials that can be widely used. They're all free, and we're happy for you to use them. Increasingly, we're very, very interested in taking a look at the shift in learning models, how we connect through personalized and deeper learning experiences, how states are thinking about content development, digital learning tools, online collaboration. So really looking at some of these different types of learning models and how education technology supports those learning models. So what we're here to talk about today is an exciting project that CETA is really happy to be able to take some leadership on, but also happy to partner with some fantastic organizations with. And that is looking at data interoperability and specifically the role of state education leaders when we talk about how applications talk to one another, what data they can share with one another, and what that means for teaching and learning in this digital age. So we pulled together leaders from a number of states, and we'll talk more deeply about that, but we really wanted to engage them in a discussion about what states are doing around interoperability, what has gone well, and what have some of the challenges been. With me today, I am joined by Maureen Wentworth, who is at the EdFi Alliance. She's the Manager of Strategic Partnerships, and she's going to be able to share some work today that the EdFi Alliance has done around data interoperability. I also have two fantastic state leaders with us today, Dean Folkers, who's the Chief Information Officer at the Nebraska Department of Education, and Angela Baker, who's the Digital Content Manager for the Georgia Department of Education. And I had these two leaders join us to bring us not only two different state stories, but two different perspectives. Angela is really going to talk about what data interoperability looks like from an instructional teaching and learning perspective and what a state or district or school could really do it when you leverage this data to do interesting things for teaching and learning. And Dean is going to be able to really talk about this from the data and technology perspective. And looking at that, not that they both couldn't talk about each, but I've asked them to take those perspectives today. So they're going to share with you the work that their states have done in those areas. So really looking forward to hearing them share their stories today. So we are going to take some time here in a moment. Maureen is going to share with us kind of looking at data interoperability from a national perspective and the trends that she is seeing across the nation as EdFi has worked with many states and districts. I will share some initial work around our state interoperability report, and then we'll get to hear from Angela and Dean. I'll follow up with the recommendations coming out of our report, and then we'll open it up for questions and answers. So stay tuned, and don't forget to add your questions into the question area as we go along. So now it's my pleasure to turn this over to Maureen Wentworth, who is actually newer to the EdFi Alliance. She just joined this past summer, but she is no stranger to working at the national level with states and working with data interoperability, and in fact has been quite a leader in this area. She has worked most recently with the Council of Chief State School Officers, also known as CCSSO, where she really established the CIO network, and some of you may know it as IMAC, that really did begin the work around digging deeply into looking at data standards around interoperability and how to engage our state leaders in this work. So Maureen, thank you for being here. And I know that Dean and Angela and I are gonna go quiet a little bit. We'll turn off our video and mic so that we can give the stage over to you.
Great. And it looks like I have control of the slides. So thank you. Thank you, Tracy, for inviting me to participate today. Also, thank you for your for CETA's commitment to personalized learning and deeper learning, all of these exciting opportunities we have to really advance student achievement with technology, based on technology, with the support of technology. It's really exciting. And that brings us very squarely to this data interoperability conversation, because it really does undergird a lot of what we're doing in the classroom, what we're trying to do in the classroom, and how we're trying to innovate in the classroom. So a number of you on the initial poll said you're classroom teachers, and I thank you for your work, and welcome to this conversation. This picture is going to look very familiar to you. When you're a classroom teacher, we know that you have limited information at your fingertips when kids enter your classroom. You might be an exception, but for the most part, we understand that you likely will have a list of students' names, and you spend your time, your free time, your Sundays, gathering additional information about the students, putting together profiles so that you can start to really support each of your students individually with individualized instruction. And so we have, as an industry, turned you not only into the great teachers that you are, but we've tasked you with data analysis, with the, you know, the task of being a researcher, with being a database administrator, and we know we can do better than that. For those of you that sit at a district or state level, this picture probably look familiar to you, maybe give you chills. Maybe you will look at it and say, wow, that looks less confusing than my picture. But this is the reality of our data centers at the LEA level, at the SEA level. We have a number of siloed systems that don't talk to each other, but maybe need to. We spend our time constantly trying to data so that we can provide a fuller picture of students, so that we can help teachers make decisions, that we can help policymakers make decisions, and that we can guide our system in the right way. As Tracy mentioned, I worked for the Council of Chief State School Officers, and our previous executive director, Gene Wilhoit, had been at the Kentucky Department of Ed as their chief, and he often relayed a story of having a request from the state legislator to legislative body to put together a graduation report. And this was long before we had cohort graduation rate and all that. And so he spent with his staff just hours and hours, you know, until midnight, 1 a.m., pulling together information from static files to get the information to the legislator what they needed. We know we can do better than that. And so that brings us to this idea of interoperability. And what we like to think about in terms of interoperability is, in best case scenario, the Bluetooth example, where seamlessly systems using the same sets of standardization and coding can talk to each other. When I have a Bluetooth enabled cell phone and I get into my car that also has Bluetooth, it's like magic to me. That's what we'd like interoperability to be for our teachers, for our school administrators, for our district administrators, for our state administrators. This ability to have information in the right place when you need it, be able to access it quickly. From an EdFi perspective, that focuses on these six key elements. We talk about having a common language for EdFi. That common language is based in and mapped to the Common Education Data Standards, but it provides that level of detail that allows for us to build tools and code to the same specifications that allow systems to talk to each other. What we're really striving for here is the ability to know everything and know it when we need to know it. The EdFi Alliance is funded by the Michael and Susan Dell Foundation, and so the technology, the standard, the tools are all freely available and have no fees for licensing. We built our work with security and privacy in mind. It's part of our DNA. We're looking for data interchanges, the ability for interoperability to support securely protected data so that data is in the hands of the people who need it, who are closest to the data, and protected from those who don't need to see it. We are very, very concerned about privacy, as all of us are in the education data space. We're also a community committed to nonstop improvement, and that is based on state leadership existing, the impact of voices from the field of how implementation happens at the district level, at the state level, and we're constantly iterating, being able to understand the needs of the field and tweak and pivot in order to make sure that the tools needed and the work needed is fitting what's happening in the field. Ultimately, above all else, we're working on teacher choice, making sure that the systems that support education are available to provide information to the teacher's desktop when she or he needs it for the students in their classroom and based on what is going on in that classroom. So if there's an application that a teacher has found really effective with a certain student, they can use that application without too much or any manual entry or data complications. So why should you care? I guess, why if folks across your agency, across your school, across your state are, well, it works well enough right now. So why do we need to make this step and wade into this water around interoperability? And it's really around some key pain points. These are the 8 that come up most for us, but I'm sure there are many more. We constantly deal with dirty data, with data that's not necessarily of the highest quality. We want to be able to eliminate that. We're doing a lot of manual right now. We're spending hours, days doing manual entry at every level of our education system right now. We're often running up against the problem of figuring out which is the source of truth from a system. This is particularly played out when you have a state report card that is in conflict with the Department of Ed's EdFacts reporting, Ed Data Express. Who's that source of truth? Or a state report card that is in conflict with a local report card, a school or district report card, because the data is taking too long to get from one place to another, and it's not updating those reports. That leads to confusion. It leads to questioning from our stakeholders, and we'll be able to remove that. Again, we have a lot of work that's going on in the technology space around assessment platforms. We want to be able to advance that work. Right now, our assessment platforms take a lot of our energy in terms of manual entry and data interoperability issues. So I'm sure there are more. Let's go on assessment platforms. As I said before, we have silos, and we've been doing things the way we've done them because that's how we do them, and we can get over that at this point. We've advanced far enough in our technology that there are better options out there. And so when you talk to your state agencies about this, when you talk to your local agencies about this, we get to a point where there is a beam of light, the clouds part, the angels sing, and we understand that interoperability really means quality data in and out, that data is in control of those who need it, that we have a single source of truth. We've been able to address problems of data governance and understand who has ownership or control and authorization over which pieces of data. We've been starting to get towards a real-time or near-time data flow that makes our work faster, that makes our ability to react to information, to provide that personalized learning faster and better. We've upped the value of data, and we've increased our flexibility to both choose best of breed applications as well as you think differently about how we're using data. And so at the national level, this picture does get complicated. There is no single standard that does all of the work to really just make everything move together. And that's because of the technical complications, the breadth of work, as well as the scopes of data, the different scopes of data. And so technically we have this this inverted triangle of different levels of complication and technology design. And so at the top level, we have that data dictionary that really serves to undergird everything. Having those same data definitions is going to be fundamental and key. And then as we build down that triangle, we get into commonality around data models, serialization, protocol and transport, and then finally app integration, which is going to be that key to the classroom interactions. And then on the other side, we have this scope issue where we have, you know, different data needs in early learning and K-12, post-secondary adult education, and into the workforce. And so at EdFi, we focus very heavily on the K-12 space with tails into early learning and into post-secondary. But for this whole system to work together, for us to get clearer on that K-12 to post-secondary to workforce integration, we really need to look at a number of different areas of data. And so there are a number of groups like ours at EdFi, including the Common Education Data Standards and IMS Global, that are really looking to work together to bring this picture into a whole in order to serve states, districts, and school needs. This is not always easy work, but it's definitely important work. And it's driven by what we've heard from the community, what we've heard from stakeholders across the spectrum. We are constantly trying to iterate, constantly improving in order to increase our collaboration and support the needs of use cases in the field, whether that be a federal reporting pipeline from the state agency through some work with the Common Education Data Standards and the Generate project, or if that's for rostering into school level applications and the one roster integrations with IMS Global. Those are just kind of a sampling of some of the projects we're working on together. But this is definitely a community-driven effort. And we're really looking forward to hearing from you all as a community and really pushing the envelope on how we implement interoperability to serve students in the end. So I think with that, Tracy, I will turn it back to you to start digging into that, how we're going to implement.
Thanks, Maureen. I really appreciate it. And if any of you have any questions for Maureen, if you'll put them in the little question space, and we will definitely get to those as we continue towards the end of our presentation. So we'll let Maureen go on hiding mode now. And we'll start talking about the work CETA did with the support of the Michael and Susan Dell Foundation and in collaboration with the EdFi Alliance. We brought together a number of interested parties. So we brought together state teams from 9 states, and you can see the states listed over on the right side of the slide. But we brought together teams, and we very purposefully asked these teams, they were 3 to 4 person teams, to include at least one data technology leader. In some cases, it was the chief information officer from the state agency, and in some cases, it was another person who was leading the data interoperability work at their state agency. We also asked them to bring at least one academic leader And in some cases, that was a role like a chief academic officer or maybe a director of curriculum and instruction. And then other state partners. So this might be other folks like directors of digital teaching and learning. It might be a state board member, or it might be, in a few cases, we had states who brought district leaders with them. So we wanted a nice kind of heterogeneous team that would really think about the work the state was doing around data interoperability from a number of perspectives. We also brought together several private sector partners, and these partners may have products on the market around instructional content or assessment, various applications such as learning management systems, those kinds of things to help applications speak with one another. And then also leaders, organizations that work in the area of interoperability. And in fact, you heard Maureen mention several of them. In addition to the EdFi Alliance, we had folks from IMS Global, from SEDS, and from CCSSO. So we really were trying to put together a group of people that could really help us understand what states are doing around interoperability and the challenges and successes that they're having. And so really, when we think about how we leverage data for academic excellence, there were three kind of big key questions: the what, the why, and the how. And so the what question was, okay, if applications can really share data and talk with one another, what could that mean for teaching and learning? In other words, what is that best possible future state for teaching and learning if educators could leverage interoperable data? So we did some work together on what I would call imagineering, on what things could look like if we could make all the systems talk to one another. We also talked about the why. Why is it even important for folks at the state level to be talking about this? Isn't this really a district or a school problem? Why does it matter for state leaders to actually talk about this? And then we also talked about the how. How do states go from what they currently are doing, and how do we help them get from that to that best possible future state that we defined in the what? So these are the kinds of conversations that we engaged these teams around. So we are working on putting together a report that will be, like CEDA's other resources, freely available. And it is due to come out next month. So we look forward to sharing that. And in that report, we really do try to give some good background. So even if data interoperability is not something you have worked very deeply in, it is something that you can start to learn about and read about more. I mean, even going to the level of what is interoperability, and just in case we do have some folks who are newer to that conversation, what we really mean by data interoperability is that seamless, secure, and controlled exchange of data between applications. So think about when your student information system can talk to your learning management system or to your assessment software, so that, for instance, as a teacher, you're not having to re-enter your class roster in every single application you use. And if you are creating an assignment in one application and it is graded, that it can then send that grade back to your grade book, your electronic grade book, and upload directly, you know, average those grades and send them back to the student information system. So looking at how applications can really talk about one another. So we do talk about and explain what some different data standards are. So again, if this is something that you've worked in deeply, you might be more familiar with them. But if you're not, then you can learn more about, well, what does it mean to have an EdFi standard or a, you know, Common Education Data Standard, or what is IMS Global? How do those all fit in? And what do these even look like? We also talk about that why, and Maureen hit on it very nicely. Why do we even want to have interoperable systems? And then we do lay out that nirvana, that best future state. So we do talk about that and how we can think more richly and deeply about that. So looking forward to being able to share that out. Another piece that we do delve into is what we call interoperability in action. And our state leaders really started focusing on what they call use cases. So there's lots of different reasons that you might want data to be interoperable for education. And some of these you see listed here. It might just be student information transfer. Maybe when one student goes from one school in your state to another school in your state, does the data follow them from one school to another? When you're trying to do data collection and reporting, how do you pull all that together without having to manually ask from all of your schools or districts? How does assessment, how do you have little data backpacks for students that follow how they've done on whether they're classroom assessments, benchmark assessments, state assessments, how does that all come together? How do we make that work for personalized learning or college and career planning? How do students have all their things together so that as they're applying for colleges, they can easily pull all those things together in one place and have it sent out to a number of different colleges and universities? We have lots of schools and districts and even states looking at creating their own content, whether it's open education resources or resources for sale. Where are those learning objects? Where is that content housed, and how can we share them with one another? And then how do you make sure that digital content is good, that we have a high quality, and what does that look like and mean? So we are excited to be able to unpack some of those things and really look at, what are some of the different ways that data can be leveraged to really make a difference for kids. Okay, we've been talking at you for a few minutes. Let's take another poll. It turns out that there are some challenges when it comes to data interoperability. We don't just have magic that happens behind the scenes. We really have some challenges that come along with it. And so based on any experiences that any of you have had when it comes to data interoperability, we've got a few different categories here on what we think, what some of the greatest challenges are, whether it's the technology, whether it's the academics, meaning, do you need better standards to align, the human capacity, policies, budget, or procurement. Adding those items in. We seem to be overwhelmingly thinking that human capacity is the greatest challenge here, followed by just the technology, just the ability. Maureen had that great graphic with all the little data standards there pointing at one another is making those actually point in the right direction. All right, so as I mentioned, these are the greatest challenges, and we dig into each of those a bit. But these are certainly the areas that our state leaders identified as the greatest challenges facing them when it comes to making the various applications work. So we do get to unpack those a good bit. But let's hear from our state leaders. So I'm going to ask Angela Baker to rejoin us, and here she comes. And Angela is a digital content manager for the Georgia Department of Education, and she's really been a leader around open education resources and how those get shared from state to state. She has also done a great deal of work through Georgia's statewide longitudinal data system. And I just can't say enough about her leadership when it comes to really making sure instructional materials can be shared and can connect, and what that means behind. And I think it's really an astounding number when you look at Georgia has more than 50,000 resources across subjects and grade levels. So definitely a leader in the nation when it comes to this work. So Angela, so glad to have you here. And I'm going to hide myself and let you share with us the great work in Georgia.
Thank you. So I can truly attest to the human capacity being one of the largest roadblocks to interoperability. I am Georgia's party of one for interoperability when it comes to digital content. So I fully understand and appreciate your struggles with that work. So we have been doing a lot of work from for a long time in Georgia. We started our adventures back in 2011. So it's been a long process and definitely want a bumpy road along the way. But we came into kind of stumbled into some things just by happenstance. So currently we have one system. It is our statewide longitudinal data system. It's our one integrated solution. And when I talk about it in relation to digital content, it holds our teacher resource link, which is our content provider to our educators within the state of Georgia. And that's where they go to access those 50,000 resources. And our biggest piece that we took is we went to our districts and asked what they wanted. And the number one comment and feedback was, I do not want to have to remember another username and password. Don't make me do it. It'll just be a post-it note on my computer and it won't be secure. So we can certainly appreciate that. And as we've listened to our users, our system has grown so much more than just data. We do use some common data educational elements. We are pretty much an in-house built system. And you're probably going, well, sounds great. You've got all these things. And our problem that we had to circumvent in the very beginning is that our procurement process in Georgia is extremely difficult. So it became easier to sit with our users and design our system. And that also gave us sustainability and flexibility. So kind of out of an interesting feat with procurement is how we ended up with our ability to build in-house. With digital content, and even in with our systems, one of the things that became very clear is everything has to work seamlessly. The first level of frustration is if the technology doesn't work, most of the times folks will shut down. And so that's where we don't want our teachers becoming frustrated with what is happening within our environment. So within our SLDS system, we have a good about 20 applications within there, and they all work seamlessly together. And they do talk to one another, and they have that interoperability built in. So we have data standards behind for our attendance, for our grades, for the enrollment. We have those pieces that are common. So when they float from one application in our system, from just the basic data set for a teacher landing page, and as they get into dashboards, those elements are the same, whether they're at the district level, the school level, or the teacher level. And that is essential to having an interoperable system. If you start changing the names of things from one application to another, not only do you confuse your users, but you have to do these wonderful things behind the scenes so that the technology knows what you're talking about. And those are beautiful crosswalks. And I'll kind of mention those in a minute when I start talking about the digital content that we've pulled in. We do pull in real-time data. So we do have an interoperability feat with our districts sending us specific data to run our SLDS system. It has to come into a certain format. It has to have that connection. And really that interoperability is designed to allow a seamless integration with that. So we've had an ability to pull resources because of that flexibility of having our own in-house. And I have a team of developers who are at my disposal that can read through technical guidance. And I know a lot of states don't have that. I'm very fortunate that I do have that here, which has helped us a tremendous amount in pulling those resources that are open educational resources. We can pretty much, for digital content, and as we look at our data, we can accommodate any file type, which goes to our ability to be interoperable with different applications and different systems, especially with our districts. In addition to that, we've done some work with our virtual school, and they've really set up the pathway for how we move content. So we have the ability at this time to move content using SCORM or IMSCC. Those are our two biggest for our content packaging here in Georgia. We also use a standard set of metadata, which we did pull from SEDS, that gives us an ability to connect with applications such as Learning Registry. So we're able to pull those open educational resources into our system without having to do a ton of revamping within there. So if I know I'm getting a resource and it's aligned to science, grade six, and it's meant for a teacher, I may have to do just a little bit of tweaking because our system may not recognize one of the fields or two of the fields, but I don't have to realign that whole resource. And if you think about, so I know a lot of folks are probably going, what's metadata? In the behind the scenes, I relate it to using iTunes. If you had it, that, these are the items that allow you to search. If you put in a CD in your computer and every time it loaded that CD and it just said track one, album one, and you had 10 songs called track one, how would you know which one you wanted to listen to? So that metadata becomes important, and we don't necessarily always want to spend that time up front working on that, but it is essential for your users. And that's where the commonalities come in from SEDS, EDFI, the data standards, the DCMI, QTI, IMS Global. There's a lot of different data sets and a lot of different interoperability guidelines, and they each have their purpose. And at the very least, if you don't use them, you should know about them at a very minimum. And especially with the movement with open educational resources, in order for me to have pulled those 50,000 resources, and probably about 36 to 40,000 of those resources were harvested. And when we talk about harvested, they came from places like Learning Registry. They came from Open Ed. They came from other open educational resource sites where we were able to pull because they had that same metadata, making our systems interoperable where we could gather that information quickly. The one thing that doesn't ever seem to be common is standards. And so we had the not so common Common Core. And I don't know that we'll ever get there. There's some groups going on to make that standard part interoperability. And if you've evaluated resources, you know that that is probably the piece that takes the longest, is that standard connection. So hopefully with some of the work that IMS Global is doing with EDFI, CETA, CCSSO, everybody's joined into that, looking to bring some type of commonality with the standard piece there. The more pieces you can get to match with your interoperability, the better you're going to be in the long run. So our repository, we have the three pieces for digital content within Georgia within our SLDS system would be our teacher resource link. And that's where most of our resources, those about 25,000 or so resources sit. Those are designed specifically for educators to use in their teaching and learning with their students in an instructional environment. In addition to that, we have our professional development area, which is now undergoing some modification, but that holds a good approximately 8,000 to 12,000 resources or so for our professional development. And it could be anything from an object to a course in both of these areas. So those are the two most robust areas where our content resides. But behind that, our storage system is our Learning Object Repository. And that is where that interoperability that we have to have, so that not only is our system talking to, able to pull from our LOR to our teacher resource link to our PD, our professional development system, but that those resources are able, if the teacher would like, to pull those resources back into their LMS. And our districts are local control, so we don't have one state LMS. They have a quite, there's could be different LMSs depending on your classroom within it, within the school. So interoperability is essential to helping your teachers not have to reinvent the wheel, not have to spend so much time trying to figure that technology piece out. Our biggest content that we do share that is portable, it's interoperable, it works, anyone can access it, it is open, was created by our Georgia Virtual School. And they really led the way in that packaging to make sure that it was interoperable. We have that content that's available to districts, so they're able to pull that into their own content repository or their LMS. So we don't have to redo that virtual school content every time we need to share it. It's in our system. It resides in a shared learning site. It also has been published to the learning registry. And I know that there are other states who have also leveraged our or the Georgia Virtual School resources. I'm very lucky to have been able to work with our virtual school for that content and to grab those pieces. But overall, that interoperability has really, I think of it kind of as your plugs and traveling the world. It becomes very difficult if you just have your one plug. You're not going to match in every hotel that you stay in if you're traveling out of your country. But you have those adapters, and you can integrate those adapters, so to say, through this interoperability. And if you get ahead of it and put the work in ahead of time, then it'll make us life so much easier. So that's for me, and I hopefully got some information on what Georgia is doing and how we've been tackling the content and interoperability. So Tracy, I'll give it back to you.
Thanks, Angie. And she's going to hide now and Dean's going to come back on. So I'd like to introduce next Dr. Dean Folkers, who is with the Nebraska Department of Education in their Information Technology, Data, and Digital Learning effort. And he's really been, you know, working with his state agency around, you know, compliance, moving from compliance to actually supporting quality access. So, Nebraska has really been a leader in one of those that has been out front when it has come to working, towards, really looking at those data standards and how to do all the things behind the scenes to make these applications talk to one another. So Dean, I'm gonna turn it over to you.
Greetings, my name, of course, as you know, is Dean Folkers from the great state of Nebraska, right in the middle of the country of the United States. An opportunity to share a little bit about our state is a big part of, I think, creating a bit of the context. It's always a bit intimidating for a number of states to follow Georgia in their discussion, because they are just doing some amazing things and have embodied the notion of interoperability. But ultimately, as we work in Nebraska, you'll hear a bit of our story and catching up to some of the path that they've set forth in this space. We have roughly 318,000 public school students, and so there's probably some of you on the webinar that have districts that are larger than our entire state population. But it also creates a unique opportunity with our 30,000 educators, our disparate 244 districts. We have a regional service unit structure that I'll talk a little bit about. And ultimately, a broad, vast nature of ruralness, if you will, in our state. The state role historically, when it's come to this concept of data, we really didn't really even talk about interoperability. It was about, hey, here's what we need you to tell us and send it to us by this date so we can aggregate the data and report it to somebody or put it on a website. So it was really strictly, historically, very focused on accountability. And so along came a study that was actually commissioned by the legislature, LR 264, that said, hey, take a look at these data systems and what's happening in Nebraska. And so the study piece was authorized, but at the same time, we had a new commissioner of education appointed by the State Board of Education. And then the third sort of piece of this is we just received a statewide longitudinal data system grant from the U.S. Department of Education. And so all three of those things all kind of came together. And one of the things that we did with the study is instead of just looking at the data collection pieces, we wanted to look at the whole context of the data systems in and across our 244 districts, 1,100 schools. And so we copied, stole, borrowed, repurposed a framework, if you will, from the Arizona Department of Education that did a return on investment study, looking at the teaching and learning systems available in schools, the administrative systems, as well as the back office systems. And thinking about this, again, from the context of interoperability, which really wasn't even in our vernacular at the time, it was really more about us just understanding what is and what exists. And so we did this study of focus groups and surveys and interviews that represented well over 80% of the student population in our state. And what we found, several things, but one of the things we found is that districts were spending over 655,000 human hours a year sending us this data that they collected. And so that was one of these moments of like, wow, that's a lot of time that's not spent on making a difference in the classroom, that's not spent on potentially using data to effectively inform the processes. And so that was one of these big moments that we said, huh. We also found financially that we were spending over $100 million a year on data systems and software and staff time collectively across the state. And so the thought process and ultimately was to take a little deeper dive and look at these systems. And then the teaching and learning side of this, we found that there was a significant disparity, an equity gap, if you will, based upon the size of the district and the resources that they had available to get access to these systems. This is even before interoperability. It's just even complete access to the systems. And then ultimately, looking across all of the systems, there was naturally a disconnect to the access points of what was happening. So as we looked across our state, and ultimately, this is kind of a breakdown. The line itself represents the number in the United States, kind of the breakdown of size of school districts and from left to right. And so in Nebraska, over 83% of our districts are less than 1,000 students. And so collectively, there's around 94% of our districts that are less than 5,000 students. And so we looked at that particular piece. And when it was mentioned earlier about the whole notion of human capacity, we looked at that and we thought, you know, that's a role the state should actually play in providing equitable opportunity and access to resources. That's something from a scaling perspective that should be our responsibility to take a look at and figure out ways that we could support that. And so we set forth a path. Some of the key recommendations that came forth from that study that started and along with the grant piece were really wrapped around several kind of core tenets of our work and the notion of increasing the privacy and security controls, reducing that 655,000 hour burden on our districts. Really kind of coalescing around standards. And we ended up adopting the SEDS-based EDFI standards, both from a data model as far as the data structure, but also the transport mechanisms, the API and the opportunity for us to bring the data connecting those pieces together. And as we've continued through our journey, the additional data standard pieces and standards bodies are critically important for the connections of this interoperability. We also wanted to make sure whatever we did, it's really about the classroom. It's really about enabling the and empowering the educators to make a difference in the lives of students. And so that's ultimately should be at a driving force of what it is that we're about. And we knew that we couldn't do this by ourselves. So we didn't have the resources, the capacity, the experience. We had to rely on our vendor partners to help support elements of this vision. And so what we were ultimately trying to do at the end of the day is create this foundation for this digital ecosystem in Nebraska that could be built from and connected to. And so the core of that is really about interoperability is a big part of this process. And so true to the sort of notion of architecture and sort of how things connect, this is sort of a high level architecture, but ultimately thinking about the student information system and the number of partners that we have. We also are a very locally proud, locally controlled state as far as decisions are concerned. And so what we wanted to do is to create an opportunity for capturing and allowing that data to transport in a near real-time way into a central repository of supports. As a part of that, then it could we can start plugging in all kinds of other different resources, like a teacher-facing dashboard that coalesces the data sources, the long-term elements of the data warehouse, as well as our accountability piece. And so I like to sort of use the characteristic of before our focus was strictly on collecting data and for accountability, and we tried to flip that on its head and try to create a system of capacity that would allow the data to be most effectively used where it's most important in a secure manner. And then, oh, by the way, we'll do this accountability thing as a part of it to help inform the progress and the process as it's moving along. So if for those that desire a little deeper dive into this, ultimately, this was one of our original frameworks in architectures, and you'll see on the left, for those that can blow up their screen, is that it's more than the student information system. It's really creating an opportunity for us to coalesce the data pieces, the disparate data sources from the multitude of systems into a single source of the truth, I think, is what Maureen described earlier. And when you have that single source of the truth, it enables this sort of plug-and-play opportunity, this environment that engages other resources and tools. And so whether it's the rostering piece, whether it's connecting to the assessment side of things, whether it's transcripts or transferring of students from district to district and the mobility issues, it creates an opportunity for that to happen in a much more effectively secure and efficient way as a part of this process. Wrapped around all of that is the security layer and the single sign-on and the reduction of the burden and frustration that's associated with using that part of the work. So ultimately, our future in the path, and this was sort of a quick glimpse into what we were trying to achieve, but interoperability to us must be more than efficient data reporting to the State Department of Education. We really wanted to focus at what ways that we as a state can help support at scale some of these implementations and the advent of technology and the use of that. How can we create that plug-and-play environment? How can we leverage other different funding sources and other priorities to help coalesce and coordinate and connect these pieces? And ultimately, how can we align the state, regional, and local priorities to make sure all of this is coordinated in an efficient and effective manner? So I'll stop there as I know we're reaching the close to the end.
Thank you so much, Dean. I appreciate it. Actually, I'll go ahead, and while I'm going over just this one little slide on recommendations, I'll have the rest of the presenters come join me again. I think you've heard two really amazing kind of overviews of what states are doing at the leadership level around data interoperability. And this is true for the other states that we pulled together as well. There are lots of great stories, and we will be kind of giving an overview in our report. But these state leaders also came together to have some recommendations on what we would like to be able to do going forward. on how we're able to share these best practices, how we can collaborate with districts, and looking at open communication between states and vendors. You heard Dean talking about that, and Angie as well. Looking at implementation plans and data governance structures, and looking to get stakeholder buy-in. I know that in the chat, one person mentioned the parent community. Certainly, that's a critical one when we talk about, you know, when kids' data is going from one place to the other, making sure that everybody understands the security and privacy of that data as well. So we're very excited about this this opportunity coming up. And I did want to take just a minute. I know we're a little bit over time, but I think there are a couple of questions that we can try to answer. So we've got one question here, looking at student mobility between districts and in and out of states is a tough challenge. And looking at K-12 higher ed employers, is there a solution in development? Does anybody know of one?
For Georgia, we created a few years back with some assistance through some other states, a product called SEED, which was the Southeast Exchange of Data, which allowed us to connect with our various states around us to pull information about students from those other states. Unfortunately, it has not had as large of a buy-in as we would have liked it to have.
And I would just add that ultimately is a big part of the goal of what we're trying to create is this opportunity for the systems to be more interoperable. We're trying to crack the state nut, but have admired and even downloaded the code from Georgia on the SEED project, thinking about, you know, how is it that we can also leverage then at least the agreed upon, I think, few data elements of matching that created at least a connection and an opportunity to transport records where appropriate and authorized through all of the FERPA regulations and those kinds of things that were a part of that process. And so yes, there are things working. There are things in process, I think, is the short answer to the question.
Yeah, I think there are a number of layers to this challenge, including intrastate and interstate, adding different challenges and opportunities. But as we get better at standardization and start ensuring that our SIS vendors and other folks in the space are using these using standards and opening themselves up to interoperability, we will get better at being able to move records, whether it's a student initiated move or the system moving the records on behalf of that student as they transfer. This is particularly an of interest to folks in the military community who have, you know, students that move quite often from base to on base, off base schools, as well as the migrant community, who also move quite often. It's a real important piece, for sure.
And we'll just do one more question that I'll kind of piece together for some things that really comes down to one essential question. So when states do all of this and districts do all this work, what does this really look like in the classroom? What does this mean? We've got a lot of teachers on today. What does this mean for teachers, and what does it look like in the classroom?
Well, I don't know who wants to jump in first, go ahead, Dean.
Well, and so, I mean, ultimately, from our perspective, a lot of the work that we've been doing right now is the what I would call the non-sexy, the plumbing stuff, the behind the scenes piece that helps to sort of connect all of those pieces. And so ultimately, it's a great question, because at the end of the day, what it should mean is that the teacher in the classroom doesn't have to worry about, does this work or does this not work? They are able then to have the right tools at the right time for the right reasons to do the right things, and focused on the craft of teaching, as opposed to trying to worry about, does this plug in and will this pop up and will this screen work and all of the different things that are associated with it. Will this data pop in? It enables the teacher themselves to do what they are so loved to do, and that's make a difference in the lives of kids.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you all for being with us today. There are a couple of wrap-ups. First of all, let me thank Maureen, Dean, and Angela for being here with us today and sharing their stories. I think we could have gone, you know, so much longer even and listened to these. These have been great. For those of you, again, that want to get your CE certificate, it'll either be emailed to you if you pre-registered or logged in with your email address. If not, make sure you go to edweb.net/digital-content and complete the quiz. There is a recording of this, and we will post and tweet out the recording from this. We've got our next Ed webinar coming up next month, almost exactly a month from today, so Thursday, April 26th. We'll be looking at building digital learning environments, tools for implementation. We'll have Ann Flynn from the National School Boards Association, Rick Gaisford from the Utah State Board of Education, and CETA's very own Deputy Executive Director, Christine Fox. Thank you again for being a part of this. Don't forget to join the EdWeb community on digital content and take the survey. Thank you, and that wraps up our webinar for this afternoon. Take care.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.